Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on allpoetry.com in the group Late Night Poets, and we're on Blog Talk Radio. You don't have to be a part of Late Night Poets to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat, talk with us, and you can read the poems as we do. I am your host, Afasiana. I should be joined shortly by Babbler, my co-host, and we are going to read some poems today that are inspired by the TV show Euphoria. So Euphoria tells a tale of some teens who are going through some rough times. There's depression, anxiety, addiction, so much going on for them, and there are some really cool quotes, I thought, as I was watching the show. I really liked the way that they described things and the way they were speaking. So I looked up some quotes and I used them as the prompts this week. Now, we're going to start with the quote, "Will I ever be anything else than a collection of every bad thing I've ever done?" So what I'm going to do is read the poems that were inspired by that quote, and then we will move on to other quotes, and I'm going to sort the poems that we have by their prompt. So here we go. We're going to start with one by Daniel Descino. And I'm going to read that for him since he's not with us today. "With Thoughts I Rot" by Daniel Descino. A moment is really an evil thing. It is a pathological liar that reveals itself with mocking laughter in a future that no one can avoid. No one who thinks. The only cure is the only thing the lying entity fears. Ignorance and selfishness. I wish for the selfish ignorance that is pure freedom, the price of one soul maybe, but freedom still. Instead, I care, and I know, and now I sit in jail. I, the prisoner, the judge, the jury, the warden, the guard, the parole board. I've tried to escape many times, digging myself into holes of happiness, joy, pleasure, peace, to find a way out. But I'm always caught. I am so, so very sorry for the crimes I have committed. Each time I am caught, a longer sentence in solitary I'm given. And each time, so very, very sorry. And my sins just won't go away. Relentless, clawing monsters, somewhere in the dark corners within a part of me I can't seem to find. And they howl and growl and they stare at me with their glowing eyes of regretful memories, memories that seem to grow more putrid every day. The worst part of it all that drags me daily to the edge of insanity is that it's all my fault, all of it, everything I did wrong. I did it. I'm guilty. I am the regretful fiend that lives in humanity's sewers. And I feel the hatred, sorrow, anger, and fear, which rots what was once the only good in me as I wait out the concurrent death sentence of caring and knowing. I deserve every second as I am trapped in this cage with just my thoughts, the one roommate I wish not to get. When my execution day comes, I can only hope it's painless. Maybe, at least, I can give myself that. Oh, wow, that was such an intense piece, Daniel. And the prison metaphor worked really well for you here. I thought this was brilliant, as always, from Daniel. I like that he emphasizes that he is the prisoner, the judge, the jury, the warden, the guard. He's all things. He's judging himself. He is the one deciding his own punishment. He is keeping himself locked away because of this guilt that he has. Where is it? There's a part near the end that I wanted to call on. Somewhere in the dark corners within a part of me that I can't seem to find. And they howl and they growl and they stare at me with their glowing eyes of regretful memories. Here it is. Memories that seem to grow more putrid every day. And sometimes if you're feeling upset about something and you think about it over and over again, you can make it worse in your mind. You can exaggerate it a little bit every time. And it just gets worse and worse and worse until you feel like you're the most horrible person for doing it. But maybe it didn't start off quite as bad as you're amplifying it to be. Now, oh, I lost her again. I thought I had Victoria with me, but I think she dropped. Oh, you're here. Okay. Wonderful.
I'm here.
Hi, Victoria.
Hey, Stacey. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm so glad you're here, since we seem to be missing Babbler today. Well, I'm always glad you're here, whether she's here or not.
You know, I know that she's in the same area as me, and the sun was out today, and that's not normal, so she might have gotten dazed by it, you know, mocked to a flame kind of thing. So,
yes.
Totally get it.
That is entirely possible. And I actually just got home right before the show started, so it's possible I have messages from her that I never got to. So that could potentially be my bad, but I'm so happy you're here. Did you get to hear the poem by Daniel?
I did get to hear it. I actually got to listen to you read it, other than my phone being a jerk. But what I think is just marvelous about this actually kind of reminds me of Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, the whole idea of how we want to do good, but we often find ourselves doing something that seems to go against our nature. We do the harm, we do the evil, and then we always try and push it off. We always try to say that there's a reason for it. And yet we start to understand that in that cycle, in the psychoses of trying to be, to use D&D terms, from trying to be inherently good, you know, lawful good, we often find that we're more like chaotic good. You know, we do things because it fits our goal. We do bad things and we justify it because in the end it's okay because something good came out of it. But we also start to understand that we're going to have to deal with this guilt. We're going to have to deal with these actions that we don't like of ourselves. We're going to have to deal with these times that we think that we failed who we are as a person, the questioning that seems to come with it. But in the end, and I appreciate this, in the end, he says, when my execution day comes, I can only hope it's painless. Maybe at least I can give myself that. And that's really, that kind of harkens back to about the fifth stanza, and he says, I, the prisoner, the judge, the jury, the warden, the guard, and parole board. Never in that stanza does he say the executioner. And yet at the end, in that final stanza, he is the executioner. He is the one who is going to be taking himself out, not necessarily in suicide, but he's going to be the executioner. He's the one that determines how he dies. And he's hoping that it is painless how he puts himself down. I thought that this was just quite stunning, because to me it speaks deeply of the nature that we have to be our own worst critic, the way that we as humans tend to compromise who we are, and the spiral that can lead us down and that loss of self. I thought that this was really quite remarkable, but Dan always has this fantastic way of projecting his fluid thoughts into beautiful works that leave you just sitting in a puddle of thoughts that you have to kind of wade through and ruminate through in all the best ways. So this is really just outstanding.
I agree. He definitely has a skill for leaving us with some thoughts to swim through. You know, he expresses himself so well, and yet he leaves you with more to think about. Our
Absolutely.
Next poem is... would you be willing to read the poem by Paul Thomas for me?
I would love to. So this is Forgiving Our Past by Paul Thomas 1. Many are the perceptions of good or bad when thinking only within our minds. Bad becomes trial. Memories collected, not always remembered. Maturing in age, years traveled, and still events accusing. Realities of their own distorting functionings, acknowledge attained, compassion inherited, connections formed. Experience and wisdom are present day friends, inner voices of reason, deity gifted resources, living in and for today, companion duty, end poem.
Great read. I want to welcome Robbie to the show from Robbie's Poetry. Welcome.
Hello. How are you guys? How are you ladies doing?
Hey, Robbie.
Pretty good.
Hello, Victoria. Hello,
how
Faith.
Are you?
Not too bad. I haven't called into a show for a while, so I thought I'd give that a whirl and call in for a bit today.
Awesome. Good to hear you. Would you like to comment on the poem that Victoria just read?
I was just looking at the first stanza here. Many are the perceptions of good or bad when thinking only within our minds becomes trial. And that kind of harkens back to what you were thinking of, or what you were saying about before, but kind of in a different way where it's all you know, talking about the perception in your mind. You're talking about how things can get worse sometimes in your own head when you ruminate too much. And this kind of plays on that, except it's more so where you're really focused on trying to figure out the good and bad of something, or like the morality of it. And so it sounds like in here, like it says, bad becomes trial, memories collected, not always as remembered. And so it's that thing of where you're really – it's hard to escape the bias of your own mind. You know, you're replaying things in your own head, and it's kind of like in your own head, you're playing that game. What do they call that? Someone says something, and then they whisper it to another person, and they whisper it to another person. And by the time it gets to the end of the line, it's like nothing like the first person said. But it's almost like that in your own head, right?
Yeah. The telephone game,
yes. Yeah, so it's kind of like a telephone game in your own head.
You're right, it is. And it gets distorted each time. That's a really good way to put it. I like in that last stanza how it emphasizes that your perceptions change because of your experiences and environment. So maybe you've learned from friends that you met later, from experiences that you have. Like, I know working in a public library has definitely changed the way I see street-entrenched people, people without homes, people who are struggling, people who are struggling to read, whereas I generally was in more, like, academic circles of where you just did. It was kind of a natural part of everything, although my parents weren't really readers. But still, that you are influenced by your situation, by the people who you surround yourself with. So maybe when you look back at the things that you did when you were younger, you cringe because now you know better. Now you know why people are in the situation they are, why they act the way they do, there's context to things that you may not have understood, that maybe your morals have evolved. So I don't know, I found that to be a really profound comment to say that you're influenced by the new inner voice of reason. Victoria, you read it for us. Would you also like to comment?
Oh, I would love to. So not that I'm super old, but I'm old enough that I'm starting to recognize that some of my memories are fading. And this poem reminds me of how as we age, our perceptions change with it. And I see it in my parents, and I see it in my siblings, and I see it in myself. But this idea, we have these memories, we have these concepts, we have good and bad. But ultimately, when we have a fallible memory, which is actually known, it's even shown that people can misremember whole murders, for example. Eyewitnesses are completely unreliable because they'll be influenced by outside information rather than maintain the true memory. So we have fallible minds. We have minds that lose details. We have minds that don't pay attention to details. And it only gets worse as we get older, and arguably it's not that great to begin with when we're kids because we don't know what to pay attention to. But as we get older, we lose memories. We lose fine details. And even in the
the moment, we lose those as well. And so the question is, that this poem to me poses, how do we truly know what good and bad is when our own memories deceive us? How can we construct morality when we are so easily influenced away from the truth to the point that people have been convicted for life sentences who are completely innocent? How can we be so certain in our judgment when we can't even be certain of our own past? To me, this poem deeply questions perception, morale, morality, even how we perceive the world. Because experience and wisdom, at the end it says, experience and wisdom are present-day friends, inner voices of reason, deity-gifted resources, living in and for today, companionate duty. We have this idea that we need to be a community. We have this idea that we are the most rational, logical, intelligent creatures on this planet. And yet we are so incredibly fallible when it comes to our memories, to our minds, even for the more intimate moments of our life. And so I think this is really quite a phenomenal poem, because to me it really questions the reality in which we live, the life that we remember, because as we mature and we age, we start to distort what has actually happened in our lives, but we just don't know that we're doing it until we've truly forgotten the past. So I think this is actually rather a psychologically complex poem, and I think it was just really remarkably done. Those simple stanzas really let you sit and think about each of them in a way that perhaps a longer poem it might have been lost in. So I think it's really quite well done.
Wow, that was a really thought-provoking comment. Yeah, I feel like I'm going to have to re-listen to this later on and just ruminate on the poems and on your comment, because it's really something that we could think about for quite a while. Sorry, go ahead, Robbie.
I was just going to briefly say Victoria's comment made me think of what I've ruminated on a couple of times, that it's the curse of human intelligence. Is like we have all this intelligence, but we can't use it properly, or it comes with this extra baggage. Like we have the richness of emotion in our lives and emotional context and that, but because of that, it can color things in that. Whereas an animal, it doesn't have that. It doesn't have the richness and complex. Well, I mean, more advanced animals, you can start to argue against that, but not as much the emotional context. But because of that, like it's a trade-off, you know. They don't have that so much, but you know what I would say what they remember is more what they remember, right? So it's kind of like this eternal trade-off. It's like this. It's kind of almost like an inverse slope of where, like, you have the more intelligence you have, the more, how do I say it? It's like the more glitches can come with it.
Yes, because you question yourself, and because you have so much that you put into it, you're thinking about what you, I don't know, there's so many different aspects of it, how your politics may influence it, how your religion may influence it, how your own emotions influence it, whereas animals tend to be more black and white in their thinking. It's like, this is prey, this is food, this is safe, this is what where we will analyze the crap out of everything, and they don't have to worry about the overthinking the same. So that's a really good comment. Our next poem is by Weaver of Dreams. Robbie, do you want to read that one?
Yeah, I'll just have to tab over here for a sec. Ooh, nice picture for it. I have to look at the picture after I read the poem and see how it influenced the poem and that. Okay, this will apply to me for sure. Dreamscapes. People ask why I'm plagued with insomnia. Do I know what stops me from resting at night? How can I tell these sweet souls why the darkness, if I surrender, lets me do things I know aren't right? If I sleep, I move through the ether like a wraith. I am lifted and blown like a malevolent mist. I know now that I can enter dreams when I want, delicately, softly, or thrusting, leading with a fist. I can't be the sum of everything bad that I've done. I fought against sleep to avoid the lure, the need that gives me so much pleasure while inflicting pain, even if only in dreamscapes that desire wants to feed.
Excellent read. I find this so fascinating of trying to avoid sleep and the darkness that you're going to do in your dreams. Maybe a dark side that you don't let out during the day. Like on the surface, it could even seem like this is like a mystical, supernatural kind of thing. But I think it also works with all of those things in our subconscious that we repress can come out in dreams. And maybe you're dreaming about something like killing the people who you're really mad at or something like that, where you're ashamed of yourself for having these thoughts, but you can't control your thoughts when you're sleeping. It gets away from you. It goes beyond what you let yourself think about. And so avoiding sleep because you don't want to be all of those bad things is really fascinating to me. Victoria, what did you think?
So as a real-life insomniac, I have what's called traumatic insomnia. It's hypervigilance that causes insomnia. And it's you tend to only have insomnia really when there's a trauma in your past. But what I really like about this is that this goes into a different kind of trauma than like my kind of trauma. My trauma comes from waking up to someone I love having taken their life. And this comes from a fear of who you are. It reminded me, and you were saying, Faze, about how you don't want to go into that dream where you're going to be exposing parts of yourself, but you can't really control them. And for me, this reminds me of lucid dreaming. This reminds me of those dreams where you recognize that you're asleep and you recognize that you can fly and you can make yourself fly. But instead of this person, instead of Weaver of Dreams or the author, the main character who's speaking to us in this poem, instead of them going off and enjoying the mystical nature of a lucid dream, instead they cause utter destruction. They let the darkest parts out of them because this is where they can take a life. They can hurt a person. They can destroy something, and it's not going to show to the rest of the world. To me, this speaks deeply of connecting to the darker side of our psyche, of our personalities, and how sometimes that can be frightening to us. My sister, if I might digress in a slight, you know, in my normal way, if I might digress, my sister often thinks of herself as two different people. She thinks that she has split her personality perfectly, and she doesn't actually think she has two different personalities. She just thinks that she has a people-facing personality and an in-the-bedroom-facing personality. But she wants to have those two ideas separated, which, if you think of it in and of itself, is kind of a personality disorder, not multiple personality, but it's personality. And this reminds me of that. This reminds me of someone who is so fearful of the side of them, or they want to have the shock and awe, as my sister does, have that shock and awe side of them that nobody would ever guess, that they tend to forget that they are still a complete person. But they've created this monster in their head. They've created this persona. They've created this psyche that they now don't know how to control because they've tried to isolate it. And in their dreams, in the moment when they are most vulnerable, in the moment that the body actually needs to rest, to maintain itself, sleep is so incredibly important. So in these moments of vulnerability, they are afraid of this other side coming out. They are afraid of the dreams that are going to come from it.
because they no longer view themselves as that dark person. It's just a darkness within them that they can't control. And so they avoid it. They would rather stay awake and cause hallucinations. They would rather get the bare minimum to avoid allowing this monstrosity to be unleashed. Perhaps, because if they did, they might not be able to put it back in its cage. And one day they may not wake up. I think this is actually a really dark psychological thriller type piece. And I really like the thought that it plays with.
Wow, that was a fantastic comment. And I think you're spot on in that interpretation. That's awesome. But Robbie, what did you think?
I kind of went along the same track in terms of you're afraid of what will come to you in dream and what your mind will release. And the thing is that as soon as I saw this, I related to it in some ways myself, because I myself am a different kind of, I guess you would call it an insomnia. It's a condition anyway. I'm an epileptic, and I'm convinced that there's something wrong with my REM sleep, because like I naturally wake up around 4 a.m. and I go back to sleep, and it seems like after 4 a.m., if I dream after that, either it's complete glory or but if it's bad, it's like my mind's going through glass. Like, it's really that bad. Like, there's been a couple of times where I said, this must be what hell feels like, because the dreams are that bad, right? There's just something in my mind that's, I think it's physically screwed up with the REM sleep from probably my epilepsy. And that's the thing, like, even though it's based on a more physiological than a psychological reason, it's scary as hell when you see what your mind is capable of producing. And especially when you get things, when you get night terrors, like I've had once in a while, where your body can't move because it wakes up at the wrong time, right? It wakes up when your body is paralyzed itself, because that way you won't thrash out and act out your dreams. And like, we don't normally experience that, but when we wake up at the wrong time, that's why it does that. It was from a different angle for me, but it's kind of the same thing Tori was saying, that, for some reason or another, when you go to sleep and you dream darker things, like really darker things, it makes you afraid to go to sleep. And it's that's the thing. It's something you have to face each and every night, and you have to find some sort of workaround around it. And that's just, it's just so taxing and hard on you, because it's a daily thing. It's an every night thing, and you're constantly afraid of where your mind's going to go and where it's going to take off on you, in the darker places.
Wow. I think that you're right about your epilepsy probably affecting it. I when I had my brain tumor, had the most vivid, incredible dreams. I mean, for years, because I didn't know what was wrong with me, but my dreams felt more real than my real life. Like, I was so connected to my dreams, and they were so detailed and incredible, and like, I felt like I could have like a whole lifetime in a night of dreams, and then I wake up and I'd be like, what's this crap? So my dreams felt more real. And then for a long time after my surgery, I didn't dream at all. But I do sometimes have night seizures, and then you've really messed up stuff after. So I see that connection there for sure. And it's fascinating the way that it all works. I kind of miss my brain tumor dreams. I mean, like, knock on wood, I'm not saying I want to be sick again, but those dreams were so incredible. The advantage of being a little off mentally is creativity, I guess.
You want the glorious part of it, or the wonderful dreams, but you just hope that you don't get the really horrible ones along with it. You're like, okay, I'll take those beautiful, lucid, dreams with nice subjects and everything in it, but please, while I have that, please keep away the bad ones because they seem to come together.
Because they were so intense. The odd thing is, often in my dreams, I'm not even there, which is weird because it's like third person perspective. It's like watching a movie. I'm not in it. It's so weird. Just make up a story, and I'm not actually there. But anyway, I digress. I thought this was a wonderful poem. Now I'm going to read one. Oh, actually, first I'm going to say the new quote because we're on to the next section. So the prompt for the next few poems is, suddenly you find your whole days blending together to create one endless and suffocating loop. A Day in the Life by Crystal Raoul. It was morning when the sirens rang. Blurry-eyed, you rushed into the cellar, your heart in your chest going bang, 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 the sudden darkness sinking in, the beginning of forever. Time passes. You think it is night, so you sleep, tossing, turning, waiting for the all clear. Dreams filled with mock fantasies. When morning comes, it feels like a whole year. The hunger comes, pre-packaged crackers. It's a limited supply, but you devour them one by one. How long has it been since I ran down this ladder? Why can't I seem to remember the face of my son? Never mind that. Let's listen to music. Italian opera. No, the pop from the 60s. Holding your hand till we both grow sick, the sun sets once more. Our skeletons, she sees. End poem. Victoria, would you start the comments?
I don't want you to have me start the comment because there's a hidden message in this. So for the people who are not following along, and I do wonder if it's a Doctor Who quote, for the people who don't follow along, there are random capitalized letters. So like bleary-eyed, the D is capitalized. O, the O and U is capitalized, and then into the NT. So it's don't, and then like blink, thing, the sleep, the tossing, and the mock. Or in morning, U, from year comes supply, W-I-L, will, M-I, miss, I think, miss it. Don't blink or you will miss it. That's what it is. So there are random capitalized letters within this poem that read, don't blink or you will miss it. And I was fairly distracted by catching that and trying to read throughout the piece and that. So this is going to be kind of a fluid thought as I read the actual poem with that in mind. It was morning when the sirens rang, bleary-eyed as you rushed into the cellar, your heart in your chest going bang, 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 the sudden darkness sinking in, the beginning of forever. Time passes. You think it is night, so you sleep, tossing, turning, waking for the all-clear. Dream in the mock fantasies, more comes. I think what I find quite interesting in this kind of reminds me of war in its own way. It reminds me of perhaps what people went through in England when the bombings were going on by the Germans. And it reminds me that when you lose the light, you lose your circadian rhythm. In fact, they've done a study that a human's natural circadian rhythm is actually 27 hours, not 24. So our circadian rhythm does not actually match the day of the Earth. And they found that because there was a guy who went into a cave and he stayed in the cave for like 2 or 3 months, utter darkness in the cave. And they watched his sleep cycle. And now I don't know why anybody would want to go into a cave to watch a sleep cycle, but that is what it is. That being said, when we take out the perspective of time, when we take out the ability to gauge what's happening in the day, when we take out the joys of life, we tend to be stuck with this awake-sleep cycle. That doesn't let us really know what day it is. It doesn't let us know how much time has passed.
we disconnect from reality. And so for me, this reminds me of perhaps someone who went into a cellar because of the bombs, where they got trapped in. They were not able to get out, and eventually they lost track of time. And it also in some ways reminds me of perhaps even a ghost who is trapped and who's lost, and someone is coming in finally discovering their remains, but they've been so lost in the moment, not being able to tell what has happened, what time it is, that they are then left in this eternal limbo, even after their lives have been extinguished. They're left reminiscing about their lives. And if someone blinked, they might miss a shadow. And so this person is trapped because they will never be seen. They will only be remembered as these remains, without a history, without a life, and without a real end to their story. So I'm probably, again, very fluid thoughts because I got distracted by the don't blink or you will miss it. I got distracted by that, but that's kind of what my initial reading makes me think. So really, I want to read this again. I'm going to read this again as you guys are commenting. So I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say. This was great.
Well, I'm glad that you calculated what word it was, because as I was reading it, I knew there was something up with those letters. Like, at first I thought it was, like, supposed to say those words differently, so I was kind of emphasizing them. I was like, Russ. I'm trying to figure out, like, it seemed odd to me, the places where the capitals were, but now that I see that, the hidden message, of course, it makes so much more sense. The quote itself, the suddenly you find your whole days blending together to create one endless suffocating loop, on the show, it was because Rue was depressed and she just kind of like laid in bed and completely lost track of what time it was. And then also when she was living her life, she wasn't really paying attention. Everything felt kind of automatic and it all just blended together. So in some ways, this makes me think when it's talking about sleep, is just like that depressed urge to just hide away in your sleep, which is kind of the opposite of what was happening in the last poem, where it was insomnia, afraid to go to sleep, and this is like more afraid to face things. But at the same time, if you give yourself permission to sleep away your life, then you've blinked and you've missed so much that you could have, and then all of a sudden you're just at the end of your life. You're there as a skeleton and you didn't get to experience anything. But I'm influenced by the show, which not necessarily everybody who watched the show has. I mean, not everyone who's writing for the contest actually watched the show. There's this one part not long after this quote where Rue hasn't gone to the bathroom in 24 hours because she just can't bring herself to get up because she's so sad. And she ends up getting really sick because you can't just not pee. But also she was, I think she was on drugs at that point, so she was like, you know, your body gets lazy. It's too lazy to even tell your bladder to empty, even when it's full and overflowing, which is, it was kind of like this gross thing about pee, but at the same time, it was like about how you miss, like, even the most basic functions sometimes when your mind shuts down. So, I don't know, I kind of got lost in that, but in terms of the poem, I thought it was really interesting the way she uses the hidden message, but she also asks questions. How long has it been? Why can't I remember the face? It makes you think about what's like to be in that situation. And, yeah, I feel like I need to reread it because I was distracted by the letters, too. It's going to take time. Robbie, what did you think?
Well, I want to reread it too. I think we're all going to have to reread it at some point. If you could repost it on the board, because I kind of lost it in the scroll. But I was thinking that this poem, like, I have to read it. Yeah, like I said, I want to reread it again, and I want to partly because to get the finer details. But one of the things is that overall tone-wise, this poem feels like it's kind of running away from itself, or it's trying to almost like it's hiding from itself, and especially at the end. Never mind, let's listen to music, Italian opera, no pop from the 60s. You know, they can't make up their mind as to what they want to hear. This is the big thing, like holding your hands until we both grow sick. The sun sets once more, our skeletons she sees. And it's that sense of you're being chased into some sort of finality, right? Like there's some sort of final curtain being, I don't know if it's death, but just because of the skeletons, but yeah, a final curtain being drawn here because, you know, you're trying to decide what music to listen to as the sun sets and you're both holding your hands and, you know, kind of, it sounds like they're deteriorating. So this is one of those, definitely one of those poems that, you want to kind of go through it more slowly and more carefully, I think, not just for the hidden message, but just for the overall tone and what it's trying to say overall.
Great comment. Thank you. Victoria, will you read the next poem for us?
I would love to. This is Dumb Spiro Spero by G.A. Grimm. Each day I drown again, chained to these. You can see the bubbles that contain the best of me as they leave this body, this broken vessel. Blame them not, I too would flee, be free of this frame, from this loss of light, this weight that crushes everything. Slowly sinking into the depths, this is my own abyss. Still I struggle, still I hope to find the surface, see the sun, to take a breath, fill my lungs, break these shackles, escape from all things that color my brain black, to just float away. End poem.
Great read, thank you. I especially like the ending. Break these shackles, escape from all things that color my brain black, to just float away, escape all things that color my brain black, to have that darkness that kind of takes over within you. I like that metaphor. And the idea of being chained to your thoughts is definitely something that I relate to. It's hard to get away from yourself sometimes. You may be able to remove yourself from a situation, away from certain people, but yourself, your own thoughts, that's the hardest to get away from. You can see the bubbles that contain the best of me as they leave this body. This is really profound. I'm a little bit speechless. I want to think about it more. I got to start pre-reading and taking notes because on the spot reading, I'm just like, there's so much to think about. I'm going to have to come back to this one too, because it does make me think. Slowly sinking into the depths that is my own abyss. I struggle, I hope, to find the surface and see the sun. I think this works really well for this prompt of being lost as your days blend together. Robbie, what did you think?
I think you're right that this is one show that I think just the overall, maybe it's the nature of the prompts that you gave, but a lot of these poems, if not pretty much all of them, are worth a reread. They're not poetic snacks for sure. They're more poetic meals in themselves. This one here, what I had, I kind of got a split of what I sensed between the first half and the second half, like where it said that ends, first half that ends, that crushes everything. And then after that, it's slowly sinking into the depths. The first half sounds more, not defeatist quite, but that like they're struggling to get themselves in that state of mind where they want to try to overcome. And then the second half is where they're talking about, well, you know, it feels like I'm drowning, feels like I'm being crushed in that, but they want to try and surpass that. But, you feel that tension again in the last stanza because it says, take a breath, fill my lungs, break these shackles, escape from all things that color my brain black to just float away. And he's like, they're making that acknowledgement that they want to struggle against it, but they see what it is, the feeling that they have, that they're fighting against, that their brain goes black and they just want to float away. So I like how, I don't know if it was intended or not, but I like how the poem kind of, at least in my mind, had been split into like two parts with a distinct feeling in them.
That's a great comment. And Victoria, what were your thoughts?
So I really loved what Robbie said of how there's kind of this split feeling, because if you take the title as the start, Dum Spiro Spero, it means while I breathe, I hope. And I think that speaks profoundly to the rest of the poem. It speaks in many ways of someone who is fighting to remember who they are, fighting to keep themselves a sliver of themselves, even as they fight against this profound darkness that they feel as if they are drowning in. And if I might share a personal thing, because I always share personal stuff, I'm notorious for it, and I apologize. But my husband is a 100% totally and permanently disabled veteran. Several of his injuries are progressive. And as his spouse and as his caregiver, one of his issues is stenosis of the spine, which means that the inner column of his spinal cord is getting progressively smaller. And when he's particularly stressed, he loses the ability to walk. When your knees give out, that will happen to him just in the middle of walking through a Walmart. He just sinks to the floor and he can't get up for a few minutes. And it's getting worse. And this reminds me of that. I am not living my husband's life, but I am watching how his life has been taken away from him. He has PTSD. He has an adjustment disorder, bipolar. I've seen the depression that takes away his patience with our children. I have seen him lose the joy of woodworking because his hands lose their strength and dexterity. We've actually done ulnar decompressions on both his elbows in an attempt to regain that, and it's not a permanent fix, and it wasn't a 100% fix. And I've gotten to watch him fade in his own ways. I'm actually going to be spending my birthday alone because I'm shipping him off, and my daughter's off to Puerto Rico so that he can have help because I'm in the middle of tax season. And this poem speaks so deeply to what I'm sure are some of the demons that he faces. It actually makes me really quite emotional to read because he has talked about having his depression be like this well that wants to swallow him up, a whirlpool that no matter how far he thinks he's clawed himself away from, he always just ends right back on that edge waiting to fall in. And so this poem to me strikes deeply because even though this guy is even though this author, this poet, speaks of this character who's going through that, I am watching my husband live it. And yet, while he breathes, he has hope. I think this is such a profound piece. And to me, it's deeply, deeply emotional.
Oh, wow. Well, Victoria, thank you for sharing. And I'm so sorry that your husband has to go through those struggles. And I'm happy that he has such an amazing, supportive wife, because I know that that makes a big difference. Even if you feel like you can't help in all the ways you want to, just being there, just listening to his struggle makes a big difference. So, give him an extra hug for me. And I think that you saw things in this poem that because of your experiences with him, you're able to catch on to them faster and really empathize with it. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Paige. I truly appreciate everything. I appreciate you. Thank you.
I appreciate you, too. Robbie, would you please read the poem by Grant 12?
Okay. So this is in our attempts to gain control. Numberless times in our attempts to gain control, seldom with humility do we turn to ask for help. Mistaken, we think in terms of flesh and blood. Immortal in spirit, the battle carries on.
Great read, thank you. I like seldom with humility do we turn to ask for help. It can be very difficult to ask for help when you want to feel in control of something and you're not. And with something like depression or anxiety or addiction, which are all themes of this show that we're getting quotes from, you aren't in control, at least not as much as you want to be. And it's a battle that you sometimes do need to recognize that you need help, and making that call is really hard. Immortal in spirit, the battle carries on. So, you keep going, but that battle doesn't just disappear. It's not one that you win, really. You know, when you have true depression, not just feeling sad, but like actually the condition of depression, it's not something that you just win one day and it's completely gone. It's, you can tackle it, you can make it a smaller impact on your life, you can find joy, but usually if someone suffers from depression, it comes back, it comes in waves. It's something that you struggle with pretty much your whole life. And it's a battle that does carry on, even if you have that immortal spirit. So I think even within the small amount of words, this brevity does speak strongly. Victoria, would you like to comment?
I would love to. So, because I speak in all colloquial evidence, the firm that I work at, I have an expectation for billable hours. I have an expectation for hours I'm supposed to work, and I have an expectation for realization rates. And I have some extra little metrics in there because of what all my duties entail. But I recently had to have a conversation with one of my fellows because there is a staff that has lived her life believing that if she is not finding fault in others, if she is not right, if she is found wrong, that somehow all of it takes away from her worth or adds to her worth. And it's unfortunate because that's really not the world in which we live. I mean, society definitely seems to think that if I'm better at my job than you are, that somehow I'm worth more than you are. But I live by the quote that if you expect a fish to climb up a tree, it's always going to think it's stupid. And this poem reminds me of that cycle that so many for so long have been stuck in. I mean, I remember the standardized tests as a kid, and it's exactly this. We are so afraid of showing that we have a weakness. We are so afraid of showing that we are vulnerable. We are so afraid of showing that we are imperfect, that we often ask for the help that we need. And because of that, we are not able to go as far in life as we want. Because of that, we are going to make mistakes that we otherwise would not need to have. And because of that, we are not going to be able to thrive in the ways that we want to. Because we do think of life as regards to these wars. My win has to be someone else's loss. My fortune has to be someone else's failure. And we're stuck in this battle that carries on. Because if I have to be in a leadership position by keeping everybody else down, then the only way to maintain control is to perpetuate the failure and the faults of others. When in reality, if we all just came together, we all would probably thrive a whole lot more. To me, this is deep social satire that calls into question the way in which we approach people, the way that we approach our teams, our spouses, our kids, our coworkers, because if we are so focused on controlling them, we're going to miss every single opportunity that we have to take a step up.
You are so full of wisdom, Victoria. I love you. That was amazing. We really do need a book of just Victoria comments.
Victoria-ism, yes.
It's got to be one of the late night poet anthologies. Robbie, do you want to comment on the poem?
Yes. Well, that grabbed me to the seldom with humility do we turn to ask for help, because that is indeed true, and you know, I think people believe the saying that it takes strength to ask for help, which it does, but it's just one of those things that, and I think when people hear it, they don't buy it or they don't want to buy it. It's just the ego takes over, and they say, you know, I've got to get through this. Something else that grabbed me here was something I want to further decipher. I think I have it, but I still want to give it a little more thought. It is when it says, mistaken we think in terms of flesh and blood. And then it's followed by, and it just clicked like a couple of moments ago when I was thinking about it. It says afterwards, immortal in spirit, the battle carries on. So the first part, you know, it says that we're mistaken when we think in terms of flesh and blood. It's almost like it's a feeling of materialism versus spiritualism, that we think that we can solve our problems with in a more material way, but to win the battle or to carry on in the battle is more of a spiritual thing. And some people, they might not say spiritual, they might say mental or psychological, but I guess. The broadest sense that you could give it that would fit for most people is that it's like an internal thing, right? That's how we carry on best with our battles and try to win. So that's also what grabbed my attention, in addition to the seldom with humility, stanza. So that was my overall impression. I'll be taking off now. I'll still be listening. I'll be in the chat, chatting away a little bit, because
as much as I talk on the phone, I talk just as much in the chat. And sometimes I feel bad because I think I scroll up the poems sometimes, and it's like, ah, wrong. Stop typing so much. But I'm
it's
a living
right.
chatterbox.
I don't mind posting.
I'm a living chatterbox, and I think it's funny that it manifests itself in chats too. But that's just me.
Well, I'm glad
well,
that
we
you're
love
here
you,
to
Robbie.
Comment.
Thank you
so much for commenting. And don't feel bad about talking in the chat. I like when there's talking in the chat. I can't always keep up with reading it all, but I still I love that it's there and there's interaction.
Okay. Well, have a good night, ladies.
Thank you.
Have
too.
A good night, Robbie.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Where are you taking
now,
us to, Faith?
This one is the last one to that same quote, the suddenly you find your whole day blending together to create one endless suffering loop. This one is by Incubus 2. It's called Bleeding Time. Yesterday became tomorrow's shadow as today bleed dry, becoming nothing more than a blurred image in a steamed-up bathroom mirror. My own visage, a vaguely recognized man, my own confused mind believed it had once known a long time ago. End poem. I really like that opening two lines. Yesterday became tomorrow's shadow. Today doesn't seem to even exist. It's like yesterday already darkened with tomorrow, and tomorrow is just going backwards as connected to yesterday. You lost today in between. It's just a blur. And I like that it said in a steamed up bathroom mirror, because there's something about that blurry vision of yourself that is distorted. And when you have this depression that blends the days together, it also distorts your self-image. So I thought that was nice that it was the mirror. My own visage, a vaguely recognized man, my own confused mind, believe it had once known a long time ago. So he's getting into that thing of his own self-image is messed up. He barely recognizes himself. And there is that confusion as time slips away. This is, again, profound in its short amount of lines. So many deep brevities that we're reading tonight. Victoria, what were your thoughts?
I agree. We've got a lot of really deep brevities. And I love what you said about how the blurred mirror of the image is an understanding that he no longer recognizes himself. I actually had a little moment yesterday. It's that time of the year for me. I work over 60 hours a week this time of the year. And so a lot of my days are wake up, go to work, come home, get the family and the kids taken care of, go to bed, hopefully, and then wake up and repeat. And between yesterday and today, it doesn't feel like it's been 24 hours. It feels like I pretty much just like woke up and it's a whole new day. And I know that probably about 2 years ago, I started seeing fine lines on my face. And I didn't know where they came from. And I can't help too, in this understanding of how quickly time is, I can't help but see my children. And they are so excited. So my birthday is next month. My eldest is going to be 5 in June. She desperately wants her birthday, because we just celebrated Sissy's birthday. We just celebrated Daddy's birthday. We're going to celebrate Mommy's birthday, which she really, really wants to come by fast so that we can celebrate her birthday. And it reminded me as a child how every day leading up to my birthday, leading up to Easter, leading up to Halloween or Christmas seemed to be so slow. I swear those days lasted years. But now I'm starting to realize that a year from Christmas is really not that far. By the time I get out of my crazy busy season, a quarter of the year, a third of the year is already gone. And very quickly the summer comes by. And then very quickly it's fall, and that means Christmas is right around the corner. And there's this whole joke that I don't have my Christmas tree down yet, and at this point I might as well just keep it up for my birthday. And if I'm going to keep it up that long, I might as well keep it up for Christmas in July. But this poem reminds us of how time slips away. Yesterday became tomorrow's shadow. It's that stubble, the 5 o'clock shadow of your body has aged. And it's aged in such a way that it leaves a little bit darker. The light of our life is fading with each day. And so yesterday becomes tomorrow's shadow. Yesterday is going to leave the shadow, the stubble, the small little remnant or reminder into tomorrow. And yet tomorrow never comes because we are always reaching for it and it always seems to come right past our grasp. We can't catch the present until finally we're staring in a mirror and we believe that we don't recognize ourselves because it's steamed up. And yet when we wipe it away, when we wipe away that steam, we're still stuck looking at someone who is not quite what we remember. And he says that, my own visage, a vaguely recognized man, my own confused mind believed it had once known a long time ago. It's like watching a sunset. You don't actually see the sunset. And I can tell you, I've spent many a sunset trying to find the exact moment when the level of light fades just a little bit, but it so often seems like in the blink of an eye, it goes from vibrant colors to dark blues. So we try and catch that moment when we aged. We try and catch that moment when we changed. We try and catch the moment when those fine lines start appearing along our furrowed brow, or just beneath our eyes, the corners of our lips. We try and catch those moments, and yet we never do, because we can never quite root ourselves soundly enough in the present to pause and savor these days that so quickly bleed on by until finally our calendar is dry and we're left wondering what happened. At least that's what this poem speaks to me. It is so beautifully profound.
Wow. I thought it was deep before, but after listening to your interpretation, it goes like a whole other layer. That was such a wonderful interpretation of that. And, I feel like being sick aged me so quickly. So in a matter of, like, months, I feel like I aged, like, 10 years. Like, I just, like, both mentally and physically, I see all of that, like, all of a sudden. And I know we just talked about how, like, all of a sudden is not actually all of a sudden, but I swear it was. It's so intense how it can sneak up on you. You put that all so wonderfully. I'm not going to try to sum it up, but ditto to Victoria.
I have to say, I always have to tease my husband because he's actually younger than me. He's only a few years younger than me, but he's younger than me. And he'll always look at me and he goes, Victoria, I'm getting old. And I'm like, baby, you can't say that because if you're getting old, then I'm older and I don't think I'm old yet. But I mean, well, based on what you're saying though, too, I mean, you know, given everything that he's been through, given through his service and the injuries and all the medical problems that we've dealt with since, I mean, he's definitely got white hairs and I don't have them yet. So I do tease him that he is my old man, even though I'm technically his older woman. So it's fine.
I think that's cute.
It's the little thing.
Will you please read the poem by Rose Winter 515?
I would love to. This is Self-Worth by Rose Winter 515. And she starts her poem off saying that she used the quote that Faze gave. She hated her life, not because it was bad, but because when you hate your brain and your body, it's hard to enjoy the rest. But we are not all the same. Whilst we may all share common patronage, being one human family, some people seem to sail through life blissfully happy, whilst there are others, like this person who finds themselves living a life of misery. Depression is deep-rooted as the seed is planted in the brain, and it is nourished by negative thoughts of self-hate and loathing instead of self-love and acceptance. The world is complex, and we are responsible for that. Of us who need help to understand ourselves and how to ensure mental well-being rather than mental torment, teachers are here to help us all. When children grow up, they need the love and support of those around them so that even when they are questioning adults about their emotions and fears for the future, that they will be able to talk freely. The internet is a dangerous tool in the wrong hands, as people have committed suicide going into unsafe chat rooms and being convinced they should kill themselves. The authorities are investigating such matters currently. Then there are the trolls and hackers who seem to get their thrills by undermining the self-worth of others and ruining their self-love, replacing their self-image with that of loathing and damaged reputations. Such is the evil of their work that it is deemed illegal, and rightfully, the perpetrators are brought to book, but it is too late for those poor people who have already died because of their actions. Please take care.
Excellent read. Thank you. I'm glad that she gave us the quote at the beginning because I forgot to say we're moving on to the next quote. So thank you, Rose Winter, for including that at the beginning. And we are shifting to that quote. I think this brings up some important points of, you know, depression is that deep-rooted seed, and we do nourish it with negative thoughts and negative environments. And there are risks of, you know, being in the wrong crowd, whether in person or online. And, you know, yes, there are, you know, chat areas where people will be harmful to you. But I also see that in things like this poetry website, there are people who are supportive too. I find if I write a poem that is about really struggling with my mental health, people reach out to me. I get messages. I get beautiful comments. There are some trolls and haters for sure. I've seen those too. But there is also community that can help. Where you see that other people are struggling and they help with your self-worth. I was actually in a really dark place when I joined All Poetry and when I joined Late Night Poets, and I found so much community and help here that I feel a lot better. Doing these shows has improved, I think, my self-worth. So there's definitely both sides of that world online. But I think she brings up some legitimate concerns that does happen. Online bullying is a very big thing, that, you know, young people don't get to come home from their bullies the way that in previous generations they could, because they're still there on social media. They're still everywhere. You can't really escape that torment in the same way as you could run away from a physical person. So definitely it's important to recognize that. And I think that there is kind of a message of hope. As much as this talks about the darkness, it's someone who's saying take care, someone who worries about other people, and there's a call for self-love and acceptance to replace the self-hate and loathing. So it has a good message. What did you think, Victoria?
I agree. There really is an epidemic of self-worthlessness. Like you said, I mean, you know, I grew up in a time before the internet was widespread. I mean, it was there, but it wasn't. I don't think I really started interacting online till I was about 16. Partially because of my parents' rules, but just there wasn't much. There was like Neopets, you know, if anybody remembers Neopets. And ever since chat rooms came about, there are people that are, they're just vicious. They get to be behind a screen. They get to be anonymous, and they do and say vicious things. And honestly, we even see it on All Poetry. There's definitely been poets who, people who, they want to beat people down, either because they don't like their poetry or because they've got an issue with the poet or just whatever. And it's unfortunate because we have this opportunity to connect. We have an opportunity to grow. We have an opportunity to have a world perspective beyond the tiny towns that we all grow up in. Whether you grow up in a city or not, you're growing up in a clique. And so we have this opportunity to learn and be better and do better. And so often we don't. So often we get the opportunity to be mean, often, I believe, because people themselves feel worthless and they feel bad, and we don't like to feel bad. And so we make other people feel bad, and it does cost others their life. But it's because as a society, we've lost the perspective of self-worth. I'm actually going through therapy to learn to love myself, which probably sounds silly, but I recognize that if I want to be the mother or the spouse that I want to be, that I have to first love myself. I first have to fill my own cup before I can fill others. And it just reminds me that we live in this world that says you don't look right, you don't act right, you don't have the right vocabulary, you don't have the right status, you don't wear the right clothes. And even if you did all of that, there's still going to be a problem. We live in a society that reminds us that we are not good enough. And then we wonder why everybody is hurting so deeply that they would want to make others hurt just as bad, if not more. This poem really reminds us of this epidemic of worthlessness that society has portrayed. And I do appreciate the warning, because so often on the internet, and I've fallen victim to it, we think that we know people, and then you find out that the person that you thought you knew, it doesn't even have, isn't even the person that they are, you know? People can give you pictures and names, and none of it can be real. And it leaves us feeling worthless, feeling betrayed, feeling hopeless, and feeling alone. And so I love this warning, because danger no longer just lurks down the street. It no longer lurks just within a community, but it lurks in the palm of our hand through the devices that we think connect us with others. I think this is a multi-pronged poem. I think it speaks of the epidemic of worthlessness. I think it speaks of the pain that is ingrained into our society. I think that there is a deep plea here, though, to do better, to be better, and of course to be safe, because the world is not as friendly as it perhaps once was.
Well said. Okay, I'm going to do mine, because I wrote to the same quote. This is called Hostile Mind by Faziana. A cloudless sky meets idyllic water, melding beautiful shades of blue, tainted only by the reds of self-slaughter, intrusive thoughts blocking the view. Scents of the cherry orchard should sweeten her smile, with honey and apples sharing the breeze. But with a mind that's forever hostile, she smells only her perspiration and disease. A handsome stranger's eye wanders her dress. He is admiring her alluring form. She agonizes over the flaws he must assess. She's a sunrise, the mirror a storm. On the ride towards home, her friends laugh, their perfect company in which to thrive. But she silently writes her epitaph, a burden she's unable to drive. Except for living with herself, her life is pleasant, but deep-rooted self-hatred is omnipresent. End poem.
Dave, I have goosebumps. And I'm not even kidding. They're the slow creeping kind that kind of like started on my left side and are like slowly making their way to my right. Because I think that this is such a phenomenal poem. The idea that we always assume that if someone looks at us, if someone says something, if our friends are laughing, we're going to interpret the smallest things as a problem. We're going to find all the flaws in ourselves rather than understand that someone can be beautiful. And it reminded me of a quote that one person, it's like, I think it's actually just a meme. It's not really a quote, but it's this thing where it says, what girl's saying to her boyfriend or her spouse, why do you think that I'm beautiful? I don't see it. And he says, well, of course you don't see it because you only see yourself in mirrors, in reflections, and in selfies. But I get to see the way that you laugh. I get to see the way that you cry. I get to see the way that you problem solve. And all of that is beautiful. We are so easily our worst critics. And I love how you said, except for living with herself, her life is pleasant. How can your life be pleasant when you hate yourself? It's that reminder. We are our own worst critics. We are always going to find our flaws. We are always going to find our pain. We are always going to interpret things in a way that shows that we are a failure. And again, it goes back to that epidemic of feeling worthless, of being worthless, of believing that we are worthless, even though we're not. And often it is that despair, that idea of worthlessness, that leads us to places where we question our worth and our validity in this world. And I think it's unfortunate, it's heartbreaking that this is the world that we're in, but even the reminder that self-hatred is so prevalent, always present in our lives, that's really the call for where we need to start making that change, where we need to give the benefit of the doubt is not with others, but within ourselves. So stunning, stunning poem, Faze.
Thank you. Oh, your comment gives me goosebumps.
Hey, a good poem deserves a good comment.
Appreciate that. Our next poem is by Mamya. Would you read that one for us?
I would love to. All right, hold on. I've got to refresh. Eek. All right, another morning. The mirror mocks me, showing nothing more than the pockmarks on my ravaged face. The stretch marks on my skin are red and angry, slowly fading into white, tiger stripes of shame. I grimace, a failed attempt at a smile. A painful wince as my anxiety eats me up like a crow gorging itself on carrion. The voices come again, mocking as the mirror does, but more insistent, louder and louder and louder. I don my hoodie and cover my head. I walk out of the bathroom, only to go back into bed, curling up into a ball of wet sobs. End poem.
Wonderful read. Thank you, Victoria. And such a sad and beautiful poem. I always feel a little bit odd complimenting a poem when it's so heart-wrenching because I'm like, I don't want to make light of it because it's so heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's beautifully written. The mirror mocking is something that is relatable to me, and it also has good alliteration, the mirror mocks. Actually, I got to go back to the title. Morning, spelled in multiple ways by putting that U in brackets. You know, it's the morning, as in the AM, but it also, you're mourning, as in grieving, maybe grieving yourself, grieving who you wanted to be, who the piece of you that you think that you've lost or that you aren't and you should be. I like the part about the stretch marks, but tiger stripes of shame is really a point of perspective, because it was actually funny. My nephew, who's 5, walked in on my mother changing, and she has stretch marks, and he said, "Grandma, I didn't know you were a tiger. That's so cool." And he thinks she's like a superhero now. Because to him, it was just like, wow, okay, you're secretly a tiger. So while we may see ourselves and cringe at those tiger stripes, they aren't inherently a bad thing. I still think it's so cute. She is self-conscious about it, and she's like, but he was like excited. Like, Grandma, I didn't know you were a tiger. So it's all a matter of perspective. The grimace being a failed attempt at a smile is so powerful too, because when you try to force it and it's not there and it comes out as a painful wince, that's just, oh, I feel this in my chest, this poem. A crow gorging itself on carrion is such a good way of describing that anxiety. It's like it's eating at your stomach. There's something about a hoodie, and I love hoodies, but that when you place it over yourself and you curl up, it's like you're cocooning in this, like, a hoodie is so comforting sometimes when you're feeling kind of lost and cold and sad. So there's something that about this where you describe being in a hoodie that just brings it home. It makes it feel so real. I can picture curled up in that hoodie crying. It breaks my heart, but this is a beautiful poem. Thank you, Mamia, for sharing. Victoria, would you like to comment?
Yes, I would love to. I think that this is a really vulnerable piece from Mamia. I've been really impressed with what she's been showing. I'm going to apologize. I'm in my children's room because my youngest woke up screaming. So I'm currently rubbing her leg, and my eldest is now waking up. So we'll see how this goes. So with that being said, I've been so deeply impressed by Mamia's writing. She's offered up such a beautiful vulnerability and talked about subjects so often people believe are these social faux pas. But I think that it's healthy and beautiful to talk about your struggles. I think it's healthy and beautiful to admit to your struggle with wanting to even be in this life. And it's hard sometimes to be reminded of your failed attempts. It's hard to be reminded of something that you want to do and are, for whatever reason, being told not to. It's hard. In full disclosure, I have scars. I didn't cut on my arms. I would cut up my ankles, and I did carving, so I actually have a heart scar in my arm. And they're not things that I'm proud of. You know, they're reminders of deeply seated pain. And they're not things that I want my kids to ever see and go, you know, oh, Mommy, what are these? And I have to explain to them, Mommy was really, really hurt, really, really sad at one time. It's easy for me. And the ones on my ankles, it's not like on tender skin. They're not really, really apparent, but I see them. I know where they are. I can feel them, even if nobody else is staring at my ankles. You know, I know that they're there. I know that those flaws, those imperfections, and those moments of weakness are there. My stomach from having children has stretch marks. You know, my breasts have stretch marks. And it's hard to go from a body that didn't have those flaws to a body that does. And again, part of my therapy is understanding that I'm more than just this body that I'm in. I'm more than just the physical flaws. And I've said it on a couple of shows, but it's one of the things that has helped me is that we're all just in our own heads. And the reason I say that is because so often we get wound up by what we don't like about our bodies, because that's what we're always judged on. But really, truly, if you want, I mean, yeah, you take out someone's heart and they're gonna die. But really, truly, everything that we are, our entire essence, our personality, our thoughts, the things that really give us value are not in a body with cut scars. It's not in a body with stretch marks. My value and who I am is the thoughts and the processes that go through my mind. And so in my own therapy, I keep reminding myself that we're all just in our own heads, that if something happens to the brain, we can lose a piece of ourselves. There's, you know, studies of a guy who got a railroad spike up through his frontal lobe, and it changed his personality in totality. We're all in our own heads. And this piece reminds me of that. Because as much as we would all like to like ourselves, and as much as we would all like to not see the flaws, and as much as we would all learn to love all that we are, there are definitely days where it's easier than others, and there are definitely days where it's harder than others. Because when we look in the mirror, we see the life that we've lived. We see our struggles. We see every single flaw that we don't like about ourselves. We see things that nobody else sees, because for whatever reason, we've become hyper-focused on it. And so we do. We go back to bed, and like you said, we put on that hoodie and we cocoon ourselves in, because we want to be small and we want to be warm and we want to be safe and protected. And sometimes that's the bare minimum we can do. But more than anything, Namyon's poem reminds me to take care of yourself. And Casey even mentioned this earlier. We forget that it is healthy and good to have days where we just care for ourselves, even if that is just going back to bed and crying because the day is too hard and the world is too cold. And for a moment, we just need to be small. I think that this is a very vulnerable piece. It's a very raw piece. And I am so thankful that Mam Yasher is with us.
I think that was a beautiful and vulnerable comment, Victoria. So thank you so much for sharing and for your insights into the poem. You are starting to get that robot voice that sometimes you get before you drop. So I don't know. I'm just preparing for the possibility of you dropping, because you tend to sound like a robot and then drop, and you're getting that robot thing going on.
Oh, no. Okay, well, I'm gonna hang up and call back in then real quick, and hopefully that will make my phone mute.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
This next poem is My Hope, Mon Espoir, by I Love Poems. Hope is the breath of my life. Life gifted me with chagrin, chagrin in age of innocence, innocence with tears, tears praying for hope. Hope is the eraser of my real nightmares. Nightmares occurred every day. Days made me vulnerable. Vulnerability caused more pain. Pain praying for hope. Hope is the hands that pulled me up from committing suicide. Suicide in a very fragile age. Fragility journeyed in my life. Life made me smile and cry, cry with fears, alone, with no hope. Hope is the light of ugly nights, nights lingering with anxiety. Anxiety became my best friend. friend who never left me. I learned to escape in my mind, mind traveling to land of hope. Hope is the smile of my everyday. Hope has more sad stories to share, perhaps one day. I'm not going to attempt to read the French. I can understand it, but I probably can't do it justice. I know when Salwa calls in, she reads both, and she does it so beautifully, but I don't want to butcher the French part that she writes so beautifully, so I'm only going to read the English section. But if you do speak French, then absolutely check out the written version, because she just writes so smoothly and eloquently in French. I enjoy her English as well, but something about the French just absolutely floors me every time. I think, again, we have a very vulnerable, beautiful piece that opens up to the pain, and then Hope pulling her out of that darkness, of that considering suicide. There's a fragility, and I like that she used that word. I think fragility is a good way to describe it. And she's so full of hope here, which is, I think, a wonderful twist on the darkness that we have in these prompts. It's really good to see the hope even when opening up to that vulnerability. Victoria, what did you think?
So first, I have to say I really love the structure of the poem and the way in which she leaves herself on. So hope, in almost all the stanzas, hope is the hand that pulled me up from committing suicide in a very fragile age. Fragility journeyed in my life. Life made me smile and cry with fears, alone with no hope. Consistently, the stanzas start with hope, end with hope. There's that leading that, okay, we're taking a breath. So we hope is the breath of my life. Life gifted me with chagrin and age of innocence with tears praying for hope. It's that cycle. It's the reminder that we're going to keep going on. Even if we take it one step at a time, we can start from where we ended. We can move forward even though one thought has ended. It doesn't mean that we have to end. And I also really love the thought that hope has more sad stories to share, because hope tends to come in those moments when life is not so great. Hope, this beautiful emotion, this beautiful idea that lifts us up, that gives us more, that provides the will to fight and carry on. It is the one with all the sad stories, because hope is only found in those moments when all else is lost. So I think that this is really quite fantastic. I think this really adds into that feeling of continuing on, taking one step at a time. Sometimes it changes. Sometimes we have fragility. Sometimes we have to understand that even though everyone else left us, we still remain, and that's where we're going to go. That's where we're going to start with, is at least I have me, and at least I have hope. It's taking those steps. It's that reminder that it's not the end, and that there is always the hope that it's better, not than it does. Her words are always so amazing. The way in which she structures her poetry, I feel, makes you almost move with the piece. And it speaks just so beautifully and so deeply to those moments when we really feel like there's not much reason for us to continue on, and yet we do. It's the semicolon of life captured in this poem, and it's beautiful. At least it's on that edge, perhaps one day, because now we have hope to read some more.
Wow. That was so well said, and it works with that semicolon, like the semicolon project where people got the tattoos to show that they're choosing to go on. I think that this poem fits so nicely with that, and that was a beautiful comment. Our next poem is to another quote. The prompt was, everyone's just out to make everyone else not seem like human. And I really, sorry, I'm going to sneeze. Pardon me, I'm going to start that again. Everyone's just out to make everyone else not seem like human, and I don't really want to be a part of it. Which is something the character Rue says in Euphoria Season 1, Episode 9. And Casey Day wrote an entry to that. Victoria, would you read Casey's poem, please?
Absolutely. This is One Night Stand by Casey Day. He had that deep, dark, silky, smooth, secret kind of stare. I wore a red velvet dress, moonlight glistening in my hair. I watched across the room as he worked his charm, two girls wrapped around his arms. Don't care who they are. His eyes caught mine a moment too soon. I looked down, but he crossed the room. What are you drinking? He had poison on his lips. Nothing on the menu, I said with a sip. You want to go somewhere? I asked without hesitation. What do you mean? He tugged at the temptation. You know, I said, looking him right in the eyes. But we just met. His indecision was a disguise. Love is fleeting, and that's the only thing I know. Don't make me bite my tongue. I don't want to take it slow. He took me to his bedroom, left my clothes at the door. His eyes traced my curves, let me know each other more. Let's get to know each other more. Paradise for a night, living fast, free, and risky. On my lips sits the taste of Yamakaze whiskey. End poem.
Ooh, this is an exciting twist to the show. It has that anticipation of the sensuality. It's very seductive. Life is fleeting, and there's only one thing I know. Don't make me bite my tongue. I don't want to take it slow. I like that. And the don't bite my tongue works on the multiple levels because she doesn't want to have to hold back anything she's saying, but also, if you know, if you get a little rough, careful not to literally bite your tongue. I think that this is a really well-done story piece. Like, I can picture the scene. Deep, dark, silky, smooth, secret kind of stare. There's some, like, the idea of a look being silky smooth really captures that kind of gaze and what person is there. Where is it now? There was a line I wanted to talk about. I've lost it. I'm sure it will come to me as you're talking. But live fast, free, and risky. On my lips sits the taste of Yamazaki whiskey. I like that not only the Y sound at the end of the words, but like the fast, free, risky works also with the word Yamazaki. So it leads up. It's not just the end rhyme, but the way that it sounds just works on a deeper level. And Casey's really good at that rhyming. Very recently have been seeing her do some rap stuff in the rap battles, and yeah, really good with the rhymes. Very strong. Victoria, what did you think?
So I promised I would read into this, and so I shall. So first, yeah, this is definitely a twist away from some of the other stuff that we've read, but I would say that it still really does a great job of towing the line of that quote. And this is why. From a personal experience, I've only ever attempted a one-night stand once in my life, and I married him, a.k.a. my husband. He was legitimately supposed to be a one-night stand. I was there for one reason, and apparently my one reason was apparently a lifetime with him, because that's what it's turned into. But I distinctly remember that night.
I was raised in a household. My grandpa's a priest, my dad's a doctor, so I have science and religion to tell me all the reasons why you should save it for marriage. And I just, that's not where I was in my life, and it's not what I wanted to do, and I was going through a lot. I was going through my divorce at the time, and I flirted with six guys, and the entire, I mean, I gave like two guys a lap dance that night. It was a good night. But the entire time that I was there, I had no interest in my now husband. I had no real interest in getting to know him. He was something, someone to be used for my own will and whim. I did not want the emotional attachment. I did not want him to be a human that I could fall in love with. I wanted him to serve a purpose. And I thought we did until he texted me the following Monday. So what I love about this is that this whole poem starts with this idea of a girl who is watching a guy make people inhuman. It starts with someone who sees this person enjoying himself. And you know, you always catch their eyes. You always see them, those that are worming their way through the crowd, just enjoying the pull of themselves. And she sees them. She recognizes what he is. And she initially has no real interest. Now, call it a lure, call it a ploy, call it whatever you want. Ultimately, she didn't really want to be a part of what he was doing. She wanted something else. And so she took it. She took it in a way that nobody else got to enjoy it, at least for that night. And even though it's just a one-night stand, even though she went off, or this character went off and had their ways, got to know each other a little bit better, left with some fun memories, in the end, they didn't really get to know each other. In the end, they still played a part of just being human and dehumanizing someone else. And as much as she enjoyed it, there's also that reminder that at the end of the night, she's still alone. This didn't come to some beautiful fruition of a relationship. It came to a night of memories, perhaps some fun, but ultimately left her alone. She didn't want to be part of this ongoing game. So I think that this is actually well-fitting for this prompt, because it reminds us in one of the most intimate ways how that in and of itself can be dehumanizing. The way in which we connect physically in the deepest levels can still be about nothing more than a little bit of play and a little bit of poison and a few fun memories. And the choice is, do we continue that? Is that what we want our whole life? Or eventually, do we want to find someone who we connect with deeper than just a quick pick-me-up? Or do we end up 40, 50, 60 alone and wondering where the time went, even if it leaves us with a little bit of whiskey on our lips?
Wow. Okay, Victoria, again, we need to make a book of your comments, because you put wisdom every single time you make a comment. And you always make me want to reread a poem three times, because I'm just like, oh, I missed that. So, amazing comment, as always.
Oh, thank you.
I was just going to say, not that I am not thankful for finding my husband the way he did, but, you know, I'm probably not going to be telling our kids how we met till they're maybe a little older.
Yeah. I mean, I met my husband on a dating website, and we decided not to meet in person at first, and we were just playing video games together online for a long time before we met in person. So I'm not exactly the most traditional person either.
I love it.
And, well, that's the cool thing about serendipitous moments. Like, they come in so many different colors and ways, and it's just like, well, that's a story.
Right? I mean, like, we're obsessed with this game, Borderlands, and it's partly because we played it together before we ever met, and it's just like, it's our thing. So there's a new version of it coming out soon, and we're like, obviously we're going to play it together. Like, it's our thing. Yeah.
I love it.
I think it's great that you met him at a time where you weren't even looking. You know, people always say that, and I remember being single and, like, mad because people are like, as soon as you stop looking, then you'll find someone. And I was just like, don't say that. Like, I was so resentful of that comment. Like, I can't just, like, give up for the sake of looking, of finding someone, because that doesn't count. It's like reverse psychology.
Yes.
It's not real. but sometimes it's true.
I mean, there's definitely those other times, though, too, when you're like, oh, when I stop looking for someone, fine, I'm not going to look for someone. And then, like, a week goes by, and you're like, well, where is my someone? It's been a week.
Yep. Right? I think I had about 4 years like that. We are going to have some carryovers because there's only 4 minutes left before I get cut off, and we have 8 more poems. So we're going to save those for next Friday, and I think Babbler will have a new contest up this weekend that will be more opportunities for the show next week, but we will carry these ones over. So if your poem did not get read, don't worry. We have not forgotten about you. We just want to give it its due time where we can comment on it, not just rush it in the last 3 minutes. So the quotes that we still have to write to you, and that potentially the quotes that we still have to read and maybe you could still write to, I could extend this contest, are: this is why the world keeps getting worse. People keep doing shit that we deem unforgivable, and in return, they decide there's no reason to change now. So you got a whole bunch of people running around who don't give a fuck about redemption. So that was in a scene in the show where the character Rue said, well, I'm unforgivable, so what's the point in trying to be good? And he was like, no, that's what's wrong with the world, is if people, once they've done one thing, then they think that they can't do anything good, and they give up, and then that's when things really go bad. So this was her sponsor, her NA sponsor, who was giving her the advice of, like, we still have to keep trying. And I thought that was very fitting for this show. This character actually reminded me so much of Rima, who started this show. I loved his character because he had, like, that wisdom of, like, the old ex-con who has a heart of gold. And, like, it's just, I'm just like, oh, it's Rima. I'm going to open up that contest again so more people can write to it and add to the show. Thank you so much, Victoria, for rescuing me and calling in. And thank you to Robbie for calling. Thank you to Casey and Mamya for hanging out on the board, chatting with us. So lovely to talk to you. And I'm grateful to everyone who shares their poetry with us. Your poems are the essence of the shows. Thank you, Fill My Eyes, for giving us this time slot. And thank you, All Poetry, for bringing us all together. Good night.
Thank you, Faith, for being amazing. Good night.